Today, we'll work on a koan, case number 41 in the Wu Men Guan. Bodhidharma pacifies the mind. The case reads, Bodhidharma sat facing the wall. The second ancestor, having cut off his arm, stood there in the snow. He said, Your disciple's mind has no peace as yet. I beg you, Master, to please put it to rest. Bodhidharma said, Bring me your mind, and I will put it to rest. The second ancestor said, I have searched for my mind, but I cannot find it. Bodhidharma said, Then I have completely put it to rest for you. Wu Men's commentary. The broken-toothed old foreigner proudly came over 100,000 miles across the sea. This was like raising waves where there is no wind. Bodhidharma could enlighten only one disciple, and even he was a cripple. Well, well. Xian San Lang does not know four words. And Wu Men's verse. Coming from the west and directly pointing, this great affair was caused by the transmission. The troublemakers who created the stir in Zen circles are, after all, these two. Many here are already familiar with the story behind this koan, but for those who are not, I'll give a brief recap. Bodhidharma is the shadowy, semi-legendary character who is said to be the 28th Indian Buddhist ancestor and the first Chinese Zen ancestor. Although the word Zen or Chan didn't even exist during his life, which is shrouded in myth. There are a few writings attributed to him, but only one has been firmly authenticated. Be that as it may, his story is one of those tales that, as Philip Kaplan Roshi would put it, is too good not to be true. The role of myth is important, beyond its historicity or lack of it, because it points the way to the truth that is within us. Bodhidharma was a prince who was born in southern India, the third son of a king. When he was quite young, Prajnatara, the 27th Indian ancestor, showed a jewel to each of the three princes and asked each one, Is there anything comparable to this jewel? The first two princes answered that there was certainly nothing better. But the young Bodhidharma, whose given name was Bodhitara, said, This is a worldly jewel and cannot be considered of the highest order. Among all jewels, the jewel of truth is supreme. He went on to expound at some length. The ancestor was impressed and later accepted him as a student. Prajnatara told Bodhidharma that he must eventually travel to China. Now, Buddhism had already existed in China for a few hundred years, but it was a scholastic Buddhism that involved mainly sutra translation and study, and the careful parsing out of the words in an attempt to figure out the Buddha mind. Bodhidharma's task was to introduce a Buddhism that did not depend on words and concepts, but pointed directly to one's own nature. Bodhidharma was already a very old man, having waited more than 60 years after the death of his teacher, when he undertook the hazardous 3-year sea voyage to southern China. He is said to have arrived in China around 520 of the Common Era, but various sources give it as late as 527 or as early as 479. Upon his arrival, he went to the court of the Emperor Wu of the Yang Dynasty. It is here that he had his famous exchange with the emperor that is recounted as case number one in the Hekigan Roku. Emperor Wu of Yang asked the great master Bodhidharma, "What is the first principle of the holy teaching?" Bodhidharma said, "Emptiness without holiness." The emperor said, "Who is standing before me?" Bodhidharma replied, "I don't know." The emperor did not understand. Thereupon, Bodhidharma crossed the Yangtze River and came to the kingdom of Wei. Later, the emperor brought this up to Prince Chu, who asked, "Does your majesty know who this man is?" The emperor said, "I don't know." Prince Chu said, "He is the Bodhisattva Avalokiteshvara, transmitting the Buddha mind seal." The emperor felt regretful and wanted to send an emissary to invite Bodhidharma to return. Prince Chu told him, "Your majesty, it is no good sending a messenger to fetch him back. Even if everyone in the whole country were to go after him, he would still not return." Having given up on the imperial court, Bodhidharma settled in a cave behind Shaolin Temple on Mount Sung in the northern Wei Dynasty. This is in northeastern China in modern Henan Province. He died around 533 of the Common Era at the age of 150. Well, maybe. Bodhidharma sat facing the wall. The second ancestor, having cut off his arm, stood there in the snow. He said, "Your disciple's mind has no peace as yet. I beg you, Master, to please put it to rest." Bodhidharma said, "Bring me your mind and I will put it to rest." The second ancestor said, "I have searched for my mind, but I cannot find it." Bodhidharma said, "Then I have completely put it to rest for you." Bodhidharma sat facing the wall. It is said that Bodhidharma spent 9 years doing zazen in that cave and was known as the wall-gazing Brahmin. This is what Bodhidharma did. He did zazen. That is all he did, and that was enough. Bodhidharma was doing the one thing that we must all do with all our being, all our heart and mind at every moment. He practiced. He practiced zazen. Dogen says, "Zazen itself is pure natural enlightenment, the Dharma gate of peace and bliss, the practice realization of totally culminated awakening. What else could possibly be necessary?" Case number 7 in the Shoyoroku, the Book of Serenity, reads, Yao Shan had not ascended the rostrum for a long time. The head monk said, "All the monks have been anxious for instruction for a long time. Please, your reverence, won't you give a sermon?" Yao Shan ordered the bell and the drum. The assembly gathered. Yao Shan ascended the rostrum, and after sitting there for a while, he descended and returned to his room. The head monk followed him and asked, "You consented to give a sermon. How is it that you uttered not a word?" Yao Shan said, "For sutras, there are sutra specialists. For shastras, the commentaries, there are shastra specialists. Why do you wonder at this old monk?" Why do you wonder at Yao Shan? What do you want from him? What do you want from Bodhidharma? What do you want from yourself? Do not try to put another head on top of the one you already have. To engage in notions that we have to do something else, be something else, is a sickness. You are what you are, right here, right now. That's enough. The question is often asked, what is the meaning of the ancestors, i.e. Bodhidharmas, coming from the West? What is the ultimate truth of Zen? What is the meaning of Bodhidharma's wall gazing? One teacher said that if there were any meaning at all, he need not have made the trip. He could have just sent a short note, or these days maybe an email. Each of us in Sesshin sits facing the wall. We face the wall of our own mind, the wall of our prison of greed, hatred, and ignorance. The wall is made up of all the junk, the shifting phantasmagoria of thoughts, scenarios, notions, assumptions, hopes, regrets, and all the rest of it, the full catastrophe. We have to face it steadfastly and courageously, but without getting caught up. Eventually, we begin to see that the wall is none other than our own self. And lo and behold, there is no wall. There never was. It's completely empty. It is complete emptiness. The second ancestor, having cut off his arm, stood there in the snow. Wow. Again, this story is apocryphal, myth, but still important. The second ancestor, Wei Ko, came to Bodhidharma, having heard that here was a monk who taught direct mind-to-mind transmission. Wei Ko was already deeply learned in the Chinese classics and had studied the sutras and commentaries. According to legend, a deity appeared to him in a dream and told him to go south. But no matter how earnestly he pleads, the master turns him down. Wei Ko is asked nicely. He has stood there many days and nights in winter. He has pleaded and begged. He has cried out from his heart, "I beseech you, Master, open the gate of the Dharma and save all of us beings." Save all of us beings. Wei Ko speaks not just for himself, but for you and me, to all the other poor bastards that struggle and blunder along in our practice and our lives. And Bodhidharma answers, the incomparable truth of the Buddhas can only be attained by constant striving, practicing what cannot be practiced, bearing the unbearable. How can you, with your small virtue and wisdom, and your easygoing and conceited mind, dare to aspire to the true teaching? This answer is, of course, a test of Wei Ko's resolve and determination. Each of us is also being tested. Do we dare? Do we dare to aspire to the true teaching? Near the end of his long night under the Bodhi tree, Mara, the tempter of ego, asked the Buddha that same question. Are you sure that you are the one? That you are to attain full enlightenment? Right here, right now? Think of it. Full enlightenment. Full enlightenment. Do we dare? Of course we dare. We sit in Sesshin right here, right now. What is that if not the supreme daring? So now, in that night, in a blizzard, as the snow crept above his knees, Wei Ko resorts to something that absolutely has to work. He cuts off his own arm. He did not do this in order to prove anything or to look like a martyr. He simply saw what was necessary and he did it. There is no way in the world that Bodhidharma can refuse him now. Wei Ko did what was necessary. That's all. Total commitment. A kind of dana. Generous giving of oneself totally to the practice. The practice gives to the practice. But this is not about some kind of self-punishment or flagellation or mutilation. In fact, these days it's generally accepted that if Wei Ko did lose an arm, it was to bandits. A few years ago, when I was head of Zendo, I was interviewing a member who wanted to become a formal student of Roshi. I asked the usual question, why do you want to become a student? He answered, I'm desperate. Yeah. We like desperate. We also like determined, persistent, dedicated. These are all manifestations of bodhicitta, the mind that seeks the way. This quality is absolutely necessary in order to maintain a continued and consistent effort. There needs to be a bit of a go for broke attitude in Zazen. You must be willing to do what is necessary. Now, nobody here has to cut off an arm, or even a finger, or even one segment of a finger. But the lesson here is that you do what is necessary. And in Sashin, we have this freedom to do whatever is necessary. To sit up late at night, or even all night, or not. To sit during the rest periods, or to get needed rest. But whatever we do, however we do it, continue the practice. Sitting, standing, walking, working, resting. Continue the practice. Sashin is total commitment. For 7 days we lock ourselves in and commit to our zazen. We can really work on and off the mat in Doksan. We can really dig into it. Now Wei Ko can ask, "Your disciple's mind has no peace as yet. I beg you, Master, please put it to rest." Now, having made the total, irrevocable commitment, he can ask, but not before. No teacher will bother to respond to casual curiosity. There are many who come to the center who are just curious. And we accommodate them as best we can, provide information, teach folks the basics of how to sit. But that's all. There can be no true expounding of the Dharma to one who will not commit. My mind has no peace. I beg you, put it to rest. So Wei Ko is unhappy with his mind. He's not comfortable with it. That's why a lot of us come to practice. We don't like what goes on in there. Why do you suppose that's the case? Why are we not happy with this mind, with its churning and burning dreams and schemes? We are never going to be happy with a mind that is separate. We are never going to be happy as an outside observer. We are never going to be happy with anything that we view as separate from ourselves, including ourselves. So, we look to others. We look to teachers. We look to books, therapy, drugs. And none of them work, not in the long term. Then we look to our practice, to our zazen. But that won't work either. Not if you are viewing practice as something else, something outside, something other, something that you do. Your disciple's mind has no peace as yet. I beg you, Master, please put it to rest. Wei Ko is looking at his mind from the outside, from the point of separation. Bring me your mind and I will put it to rest. Like all good teachers, Bodhidharma does not answer the question. He answers the student. Yes, bring me this mind that has no peace, no rest. Let's look at it. Look for that mind. Look for it in your sitting, in your walking, in your resting, in your eating. Look for it constantly in mu, in the counting, in the breath. Is there something there? A mind that you can trot out and show me? If Bodhidharma were to ask you right now, bring me your mind, how would you respond? So we sit and look for mu, for the sound of one hand, for this mind, this restless mind. It is that intense questioning, that searching, that begins to cut through the delusions. It is the sword of Manjusri. But this search leads almost inevitably to despair. There is nothing more difficult or discouraging than to look and look and look for something that obstinately refuses to be found. To live a question that refuses to be answered. Suddenly, everything becomes a question. What am I doing here? Why am I banging my head against this wall? Who the hell am I anyway? What is this? One stands at the edge of an abyss as the whole notion of self begins to unravel. This is the dark night of the soul. The experience can be terrifying. But in our practice over the years, we learn to recognize that this is a necessary step. One must leap into the abyss, and not just once, but over and over. The abyss is in fact a bridge to a deeper understanding, a deeper and more lasting connection to our nature. We don't experience this just once, but every time we come up against it, be it a koan or a life situation. But then comes the dawning realization. This mind is not to be found. All there is, wherever you look, is vast silence. And Waco reports, I have searched for my mind, but I cannot find it. And Bodhidharma replies, then I have completely put it to rest for you. Do you get the joke here? Master and disciple both smile. Wu Men's commentary. The broken-toothed old foreigner proudly came over 100,000 miles across the sea. This was like raising waves where there is no wind. Bodhidharma could enlighten only one disciple, and even he was a cripple. Well, well. Xian San Lang does not know four words. Bodhidharma took a long and dangerous voyage, although not of 100,000 miles. Or was it? It was the distance between heaven and earth. Or it was no distance at all. At his own realization experience, Xuan Sha, the heir of Shui Feng, said, Bodhidharma did not come to China. The second patriarch did not go to India. There is no coming or going. Bodhidharma is Bodhidharma is Bodhidharma, always and everywhere. You yourself are the same. India, China, Denver do not enter in. Raising waves where there is no wind. Well, that's the teacher's job, to create disturbances, to bring up uncomfortable questions, to poke wounds in healthy flesh. It is easy to say that all beings are by nature Buddha, but that's not good enough. A fish, a bird, or a rock is completely one with each moment. That's a fact. But the realization of that fact, beyond the theoretical, the verbal, comes only with practice and training. We need our teachers to prod, goad, and con us, gouge our notions about the self. He could enlighten only one disciple, and even he was a cripple. Well, well. Such a sardonic remark. Wu Men shows no mercy. Is he speaking of Waco, the second ancestor? Why was he a cripple? Was it just that missing arm? All of us are cripples. To the extent that we attach to sights, sounds, things, we are blinded and crippled. We thrash about in our self-created prison and long for the freedom that is right in front of us. How sad. As for Hsien Sang Lang, who doesn't know four words, he was a fisherman. He was illiterate, uneducated, but still he caught fish. Is there a lesson here? Woman's verse. Coming from the West and directly pointing, this great affair was caused by the transmission. The troublemakers who created the stir in Zen circles are, after all, these two. A great affair indeed. Bodhidharma transmitted the Dharma in his sitting. How do you transmit the Dharma? As for these troublemakers, wouldn't it be nice if they'd never shown up? We could all go waltzing down the garden path, not having to worry about all that zazen and the pain it brings up. From the very beginning, there's never been a single thing. Why make a big deal and stir up trouble? Once a monk said, "When I went to my teacher, I had nothing. When I came away from my teacher, I had nothing." Another monk asked, "Why did you go to a teacher?" The first monk said, "How else would I know that I had nothing?" This is such a simple practice. All we have to do is sit there with mu, or the breath, or the counting, and that's it. I mean, that's really it. But we don't quite trust it. So we keep sitting. We sit until we realize that we have that great nothing. We are that great nothing. That's why it's called practice. Wu Men says, day and night keep digging into it. Dogen says, engage yourself in zazen as though saving your head from fire. Or just sit calmly, persistently, patiently, facing the wall, facing your mind. Do what is necessary, without fear or favor. Just continue. Together with all beings, we realize the way.